And now I would like to introduce our next presenter, Sarah. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Sarah, codependent. Grateful to be in recovery since October 16th, 1999. I will be asking for answers from you, as well as sharing my experience, strength, and hope. The topic is Tools for Recovery. Coda has this handy dandy little booklet. And my thoughts, experiences, and things that I've heard in meetings and elsewhere in the world. So the booklets, well, the tools of recovery, I'm in some other 12-step programs, and the tools are usually the steps, the traditions, meetings, sponsorship, higher power, things like that. So I open up the CODA tools for recovery, and it says breaking the cycle of isolation, breaking the cycle of isolation. That just doesn't match with what I've always heard the tools to be. So I would like to start with a question to you guys. Why might this be the first tool mentioned? Does anybody have any? I'll talk about what it talks about in the booklet later, but just the topic of breaking the cycle of isolation. Why might that be important for CODA recovery? Sarah.
Okay, this is a wild guess because I'm brand new, but I'm not new to 12-step. So my top of mind thing is the opposite of addiction is connection. So isolation would be like along the lines of, you know, addiction. Okay, I can tell I'm wrong. I will just pass. Thanks.
No. That's thanks. Great. Thank you. It just made me think of a saying, but I'm going to ask for another hand or for Lynn to share, and I'll put that thought together. Lynn?
I would say to be able to get another perspective on your thoughts, to have someone to bounce your thoughts off of, and not be just inside your head and have that as your only source.
Yes, I remembered what I wanted to say. Isolation is the dark room where I develop my negatives. I heard that somewhere and I just think, yeah, my negatives come from the dark room where I've isolated. Okay, Uta.
Hi, I'm Uta, codependent. Yeah, well, I just had a brainwave and I thought, well, when I'm, for example, a people pleaser or like I'm completely intellectual and I can't even know what my feelings are, then it's very difficult to make friends because I'm just forever asking people lots of questions about them. Like my mind's just going in overdrive and asking them, you know, what have you done? And what are you going to do next year? And at the same time, it's just like interrogation almost, because it's all like from the mind. My mind is creating so many questions. So people might not feel comfortable and then I can't make friends. And so I think that's where a lot of the caretaking and the people pleasing actually leads to a lot of isolation and not having friends. And the opposite would be to be connected, to learn how to be connected.
Thank you. Kathy?
Hi. Yeah, thank you for the topic. It's amazing. And I think it's a perfect topic for me personally, because I was always so good, and I still am, about telling everybody else how much they're isolating. And as we do as codependents, pointing out all the different ways that they are isolating. And actually, when I look at myself, particularly as this is now a topic that's out there, wow, I can really, really, really isolate. And I choose to do it. And I'm actually responsible So yes, I think it's an amazing topic, and certainly I work very hard at trying not to isolate, and there's been great improvement. I have beautiful people in my life and what have you, and lovely situations, and I show up at them. But if I looked deep, there's still an enormous amount of isolation taking place. And yes, codependency is a form of addiction, relationship addiction and all of that. So, you know, having quite an addictive personality in the context of codependency, I can see how I often choose to connect with people who are specifically going to put me in deeper into isolation. So it's wonderful to be able to see those patterns more clearly now, and to also say that I believe that all codependents deliberately isolate, and that we are responsible for changing that. That's just my personal view. Thank you.
Thank you. Sandy.
Good morning, Sandy, codependent. To me, isolation is where I remove myself from others, where CODA, it's a we group. We can't recover without others. Therefore, my being in isolation is not helping me. So by breaking that cycle of my isolation, I'm able to join fellowship, become part of the unity of CODA. Thank you so much for your service. I pass.
Thank you. Mahima.
Yeah, as I told in my previous session, I was a big reader, so I read this somewhere that shame, that is the feeling of being ashamed, actually like thrives more in secrecy and in isolation, and like one way to heal the shame is to just like let yourself be seen and, you know, come out and talk to people and listen. So maybe that's why, because yeah, I mean other recovery tools can be used to shame ourselves if we are doing it in isolation. So breaking the cycle of isolation is the first thing. Yeah, that's just my take. Thank you.
Thank you. Emma.
I echo everything that everyone's just said. Hi, by the way. For me, isolation is just going into limbo. It's like pause recovery, because I'm just doing what I've always done, which is live in my head and create a world that actually is not real and it doesn't exist. And I do that with absolutely everything. So it's just a halt of recovery for me, really. That was all. I don't know why I even said that, because everybody's already said that anyway. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Hi, Mom. Yeah, for me, I think the important thing is cycle. These patterns that I've done my whole life, that's been of my own choosing. That's been my own thoughts. I created the narrative, and it led me to a point where it started to drive me a bit insane. So that was me isolating from the 12 steps. That was me isolating from people. That was me isolating from help, and isolating from my higher power. So the 12 steps has helped me to connect to my higher power, to fellows, to be the best conduit of myself as well. Thanks.
All right. Thank you all. So the first category under breaking the cycle of isolation is asking for help. Easy, no problem. I did have help. I had a hard time asking for help. I can't even say it. Because I thought I could do everything myself, and for you too. So then I realized I like to help other people. Maybe they do want to help me. And why should I deprive them of the opportunity of helping me if they would want to do that? So another point is, if I don't ask and assume others will guess what I need, that's just codependent in so many ways, making assumptions, thinking people should know what I want. I probably won't get what I want. I'll get something that I don't want. And then what do I do with it? But, and it may lead to resentments. If I'm expecting somebody to fulfill my needs and they don't, and they don't even know what they are, that could lead to a resentment. It's really not their fault. It's up to me to speak up. So, I've been on the theme of connection lately, the word connection with my higher power and with other people. And a lot of times that's one and the same, because my higher power speaks through other people. But I heard this quote: asking for help is not just a path to humility, it is a path to connection with my fellows and with God. So I really like that. It's sometimes coincidental that some theme that I've been thinking of coming from one meeting, I hear something in another that just kind of, or on email, a daily email reading that really blows my mind. So it's okay. Asking for help is not a sign of weakness. After all, it's a tool for recovery. So the next one I love, telephone. Just so you know, if someone puts their info on the contact list at your meeting, which may be on Zoom and put in chat or in-person meetings, they might have a phone list. They're willing to accept calls. I don't know how much they're used. I get calls maybe once a year from people I don't know in program that might have gotten the list. But there's several things you could do when you pick up the phone. You could ask someone how they are. And that could be whether I'm struggling and want to kind of get distracted, I can call and say, how are you? Or when I'm feeling good and I want to be there for others. I could call to whine, dump, or get something off my chest. But my sponsor is usually the lucky one that gets to hear all of that. But if she's not available, I can call somebody else too. I could call to talk and find out my own answers. When I call, I could ask for feedback or no feedback. And I find it helpful whether I'm asking for help to get asked questions, or when I'm offering to give help, instead of giving advice, I could ask the other person for questions so that they could find their own answers. And remember, always, I am not a professional therapist. Yeah. So the other thing about the telephone is texting, which I adore. It's like somebody's always there. Maybe not right at that moment, but they'll get back to me. And I'm just, there's so many people I like to talk to in a day. And if I get on the phone with one, well, anyway, you guys either like or don't like texting. The next thing is computers, which would be Zoom meetings and events. Got to be grateful for that. Going to websites for information, like CODA.org. And computers, you can also email people. And I found lately that I have international friends now, galore, and they don't text, actually. They WhatsApp. And so when I want to get to a large group of people, I usually use email because it's more international, I guess. So another way to break isolation is sponsorship. I love sponsorship. I'll start with my third point. It's free. It's amazing. It's probably one of my favorite things in life is being a sponsor and having a sponsor. So I'd like to open it up again for if you're a sponsee or a sponsor and would like to share the benefits you've had, if you'd like to raise your hand to share. And if you don't know about the topic, there was discussion about it earlier that the recordings will be posted. So Lisa, please share.
Hello, everybody. I am Lisa from South Florida, and I am a sponsor. And, you know, sponsorship is phenomenal. Currently, right now, I have two sponsees. One is in the United States, and the other one is in Norway. And these ladies are so dedicated and so devoted and completely into the program as I am. And I find from being in a sponsor, I get to redo the steps again, over and over and over again. And I learned so much from my sponsees. They are just absolutely brilliant. And, you know, I'm a very diligent sponsor. They will tell you that we definitely go through the steps and we definitely talk about higher power and meditation. Because just like Sarah had said, I'm not their therapist. I'm not their mother. I'm not their father. I'm a helper. I am on this journey with everyone else. Namaste to you all.
Thank you. David?
Good morning, Sarah. David A., New York, codependent. I talk with people. I eschew the word sponsor. I don't like to, I'm not fond of the label. I like to remind myself that sponsor and sponsee are equal. And that the third party in the conversation should always be higher power. I have found a lot of success with putting my personal experiences, putting my phone number and contact information in chat in online meetings is fairly successful. I do get calls, sometimes just one call, sometimes a few, but I often do get called back. I like being able to talk with people in this program about recovery because I've learned that service is the secret sauce for me. Getting involved in service opened up areas of my recovery I didn't know existed. So I'm grateful for this program and grateful for all of the things I learned in this program. And certainly being able to talk with people about our recovery and engaging in fellowship is an important part of my recovery. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, the next one is literature. How does literature break the cycle of isolation? Maybe you can ponder that. Maybe I can answer that. I found many of my answers to my difficulties in CODA literature. And again, my telephone, I have all the books on my Kindle, and it's simple just to go to search a word, and it brings up all the times it's mentioned in the Codependence Anonymous book or the workbook or the In This Moment Daily Meditation Reader. So that's, and then the thing about that is if I don't want to connect with a person, I don't need to interact if I just go to the literature. So there's a time for everything, right? So CODA Service Conference endorsed literature is my go-to. And it's written by codependents for codependents like me. So it's still connecting with other people. It's just not interacting. So I think we're on to the next section, which is stress busters. Can you imagine a program having a tool of stress busters? I was puzzled by the title, but stay positive is number one. So self-talk, positive self-talk is so important to me. It's really changed my life because I used to think I was no good. I'd tell myself I was no good. And I turned that around. I have lots of questions. Let me just take a few. I mentioned affirmations in my notes. And if maybe two or three people want to mention their favorite affirmation at this time, raise your hand. Lynn, you got one?
I'm enough and I'm lovable.
Thank you. Made me smile. David?
The elevator to serenity is non-functional, so I'm taking the stairs one step at a time.
One step at a time. Thank you. Lisa?
I am worthy and I am worthy of recovery.
Thank you. And Lisa?
I feel calm when I turn it over.
Oh, is that the calm I'm feeling? Thank you. It really works. So the next one I really can't talk about. It's called Slow Down. I'm considered an energizer bunny, not always at 3:35 in the morning, but there was a commercial in my childhood that says it was for a candy bar, I believe. And the person in the commercial said, I do everything fast, everything. And that runs through my head during the day because I am just on it. I am not a procrastinator. I have to do it right away, whether I know what I'm doing or not. But the suggestion is to collect my thoughts. Okay, that's a good idea. Reflect on what is happening in the moment. Take time to consider healthy options and reconnect with my higher power. So I'm speaking about this stuff for my future, I guess. Maybe I'll listen and adopt some of this gradually into my repertoire. So take care of myself. I didn't think it was important before. And it turns out that I had several breakdowns in my life just from doing too much and not taking care of myself. So this is a biggie for me. By the way, we have the schedule had a glitch in it, and I have 2.5 hours. So I am appreciating all the shares, and I would like to ask for more feedback on what do you do to take care of yourself? There's many things. Well, as codependents, it is hard to think of it, or at this time of day, maybe to gather thoughts to share. I know I'm having a struggle, but Betty, what do you got?
It's midday here in Europe, so sorry, the middle of the night, but I'm in admiration. Self-care for me, one of the major things is boundaries, enforcing boundaries, removing myself from situations that are not healthy or feel good to me, That in a sense of boundaries, and also boundaries on with myself, on my thoughts, not letting myself obsess about things or think about things for too long. Yeah, that's a start, boundaries.
Thank you. Kathy.
Yeah, thanks to this program, I've got really good at doing the little stuff. So like if I'm having a rough day, I'll even take myself for McDonald's flaky ice cream, you know, which is only like R9 or whatever. So I'm very good at the little things. And when COVID broke, the security asked me to feed the squirrels. And there's a whole white squirrel, albino squirrel community there that's now developed. And I have this like very connecting relationship with the squirrels and all that. So I'm very good at the little stuff like that. And obviously, you know, because I'm working with Melody Beattie's book, Beyond Codependency, now very intensely, and other books, Norman Vincent Peale. So my spiritual readings every day are a way of taking care of myself, my 12-step readings, getting to meetings. So I'm very good at that. But I feel that I need to do a lot of work on the outer image. I can't stand my weight. You know, sometimes I will comfort eat on emotions rather than feeling feelings and connecting and, you know, things like that. So I'm good at the little stuff. There's still a lot to work on. But I do. Yeah. And I also find it so important to get good rest. I'm not a person that can function well in 5-6 hours sleep. So if I'm sick, I stay at home. If I'm really sick, I don't push myself to the limits anymore. And if I'm tired or whatever, I always try and get my 8 hours sleep. So yeah, I've really learned to, the only thing is that I'm struggling with balance because now all of that is in place and the spiritual world is rocking, but the work and the financial world is now out of kilt. So I guess one can't get it all right at the same time. And eventually we do, which is perfect balance. So yeah, but it's good to know I can do the little things well now. Thank you.
Thank you. Judy?
Hi, Judy. Good evening. Yeah, so it's not so hard here to actually follow the meetings because it's here in Australia. It's
You're kind of warbly.
PM, so it's quite okay. What I do to look after myself is like quite mundane. So I've got to take care to go to the dentist. I go to
having a hard time understanding.
Sorry,
you.
But to do my food shopping. Sorry. I have to book a massage once a month for myself. So I made a decision to meet a colleague for coffee once a week and to connection right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Emma?
Hi. Mine's more of a question. I mean, I do self-care and I feel great when I go for walks, when I meditate, when I exercise. But I'm sort of a little bit confused at the moment about the sitting with feelings and going through the middle of what I'm experiencing rather than distracting myself, pushing it away, taking action and doing something else. But then I'm kind of questioning, is this a sort of like an addiction? Because once I've got through the other side, there's a kind of high and I feel like rewarded because I've overcome it. It's something that I'm not quite clear with, but I don't have a sponsor at the moment. And I'm really good at distracting myself from pain and, you know, pushing feelings down, pushing away, I can go off and I'll do this and I'll feel rewarded. But it's like sitting with it, I suppose I'm actually answering my own question. It's sitting with and handing it over. Yeah, it's handing it over, isn't it? And then things pass. But yeah, self-care is for me is very mixed up, because I do a lot of, when I'm grooming, I feel good, but I know that that's not really, yeah, when I mean grooming, I mean leg wax and hair, getting my hair done and feeling, and it does make me feel good, but I know it's superficial rather than deeper self-care. But maybe they're connected. Maybe it's okay to do that too. Anyway, I'm not sharing experience right now, but I'm questioning, which is not what you asked for, so I'm going to shut up. Thanks.
Oh, that's fine. Other people might have our answers, so okay. Thank you. And I was going to sing later, but the only way out is through. I don't know if anybody knows that song, but that's what I think of when I think of, and it's feel, deal, and heal. But yeah, the basics, the like, what do I do next kind of thing. Yeah, I'm glad I have a sponsor and other people to talk to guide me. Let's see, Susan.
Yes, I've been joining when I can. I just woke up, so I'm in the U.S. in Florida. And the way I take care of myself, I used to treat myself with food, and then I realized I was losing self-esteem because I was gaining weight. So I joined Weight Watchers. I lost over 50 pounds, and that certainly does help you feel better about yourself. And I found that I could treat myself with things like fresh fruit or a manicure or a swim in the pool or thing. It didn't have to be food. And I always allow, there isn't anything I can't eat, but I just have a bite of it, you know, just, and my motto is nothing tastes as good as being slim feels. And so that kind of motivates me every time I want to have a donut or a huge piece of pie, where I think, you know, I could just taste it and get that sweet taste, but then I'm taking care of myself and I'm able to play with my grandkids more, and I'm able to, I mean, I get a good night's sleep, and that's self-care to me, is to, you know, instead of giving up my water aerobics to drive somebody here or there, I say, well, I've already got something scheduled, and I actually learned to say no and set a boundary, and that's very empowering. So that's how I do it. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Tari?
Hi. Some of the more everyday ones that I try to do are keeping up with my hobbies and exercising. But I'd say the one that I'm most proud of or am happy about is being more preemptive about my health. So not waiting until I'm completely falling apart before I go to the doctor, or going and checking out a cavity, possible cavity. And I have a history of not doing that in the past. And I feel like it's really contributed to the way I feel about self-care and how it's made me feel in general. So, yeah. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you. And Yvonne.
Thank you. Maybe you've asked this question before, but affirmations. Whenever I feel down or when I need to give myself a pep talk, I got a little book of affirmations or things that I pick up, and, you know, and I say, oh, that's nice. I'll copy it down and I'll read it to them. So some of them are, my past has not been a mistake. All that has happened has not been incidental or accidental. All that has come into my life was designed to prepare me to become who I am and to help me learn the lessons I came here to learn. There is a purpose for and a gift from each relationship, even the most painful relationships. The longer I work at recovery, the less I view myself as a victim and the more I am receptive to these gifts. As I used to be wallowing in self-pity for a long, long time. So I find working the program and as even working with sponsees, the two-way relationship is you know, I'm enriched by our interaction and our conversation. So thank you.
Thank you. Ooh, I turned the page prematurely because the next one is hard for me too. It's live in the present. I am a master scheduler. Love looking at my calendar, packing it full, coloring it. Well, on my phone, of course. And I like to look forward to things, which doesn't have to be in sharp contrast with being in the present. But I am learning to take it one day at a time, which is kind of like living in the present, and knowing that I have what I need right now, right in this moment. And something new at a meeting, other meeting that I go to, is that there's a set aside prayer. I think somebody else earlier in the event mentioned it, that when I go to a meeting, I probably have some stuff on my mind and I can just kind of say the set aside prayer. I don't know it by heart, but basically set aside all the next things I have to do, something I did that I regret, anything that's on my mind that's going to keep me from being present. I can set that aside, and I've been able to do it. It's really cool. I can actually just listen. Well, I do get distracted a little bit because I'm looking at my computer on meetings nowadays and texts and emails come up, but I've been able to just say, oh, like they say in the movie theater, it can wait. Yeah, right. Sometimes. Anyway, meetings is the next category. Again, the connecting, I'm not alone. And we have the promise one is, and since I'm talking a lot, I can't think of it by heart. I know a new sense of belonging. The feeling of emptiness and loneliness will disappear. And I've done other things in my life, like drinking and other things to not feel lonely. But going to meetings, I have just found the best of friends. And I don't feel lonely ever. There's always somebody there. If I feel lonely, it's because I've shut myself down and isolate, but I don't tend to do that. In fact, I never have alone time, which is another thing I'm working on. I shouldn't say never. I have 3 or 4 minutes every morning. So listening at meetings is important. Sharing experience, strength of hope and hope of the CODA message, not just all my experiences without sharing that, oh, that's a codependent issue. I better look at that tool. Having a home group, which is connection and doing service work, making friends, and I can become more confident by doing service. And I'll talk more about service later. Love that topic. Sharing in meetings, sharing my feelings, to recognize them and release them. And feel, deal, and heal. Sharing my pain and my shame and my joyous experiences. There's an atmosphere of safety and security, anonymity and confidentiality. I can share without being interrupted. And I used to be really shy. And I can still kind of like shut down in a group where everybody's talking at once. I just think, okay, I'll just stand here. So when I was shy, I came right out of AA where drinking loosened me up to talk. Well, then I stopped drinking and I like the word social scared me to death. But I'd go to meetings and people were all chatty and then we'd have the meeting and there'd be one person sharing, and I don't have to think about what to say to that other person to solve their problems or make them feel better. I just listen for me, and then I can share. I have my time to share, and people listen or not. But then I got more comfortable speaking in that format, in that structured format, because I come from a background of structure. So now I can talk better. I still stumble around a bit, but that's quite all right. So we also share in meetings without being criticized, ridiculed, or judged, or at least people don't usually tell me that they're judging me. So anonymity is important. What you hear here, what is said here, when you leave here, let it stay here. My participation may not be made known without my consent. So if I'm telling you the guts of my life, I expect it not to be broadcast on Facebook with my name and picture. So principles before personalities is an important part of step 12. And what it means to me in regards to anonymity is that someone with a PhD in psychology has no better or worse things to say than a newcomer. I find I hear such great things from everybody, everybody, no matter how long you've been here, or what you do for a living, or who your friends are, what you wear. So anyway, and then listening. It says in the book, actively, with concentration, attentiveness, and empathy. So I'd like to hear from you what listening empathetically means. Because empathetically is kind of a confusing word for me. David? Oh, did you want
to? Sure. Well, I just wanted to say hi. I'm David. I'm codependent, and I may be alone, but I'm never lonely, and always reminding myself that my secrets keep me sick. And sharing empathetically, listening empathetically, for me means listening without judgment. Allowing myself to realize the person who's sharing with me is telling me something about them that is true for them, and that I need to listen carefully and accept that person as who they are, what they tell me, and not think about what I want to say to them that will help them fix themselves. I want to be out of that business, people-pleasing business and people-fixing business. Listening empathetically means listening without judgment, without expectation, allowing myself to hear what that person is saying and be supportive of their journey in recovery, not my journey in recovery when they're sharing with me. Thank you.
Thank you. Lynn.
Hi, Lynn here, codependent, always codependent. I would have to say to listen and understand where they're coming from and why they feel the way they do. I think that's it.
Yeah. A bit of understanding, even when people don't feel understandable. Susan.
There we go. Finally got unmuted. I think empathy, unlike sympathy, you can feel sorry for somebody, but empathy is more putting yourself in their position and trying to feel what they're feeling. And it's almost like acting, like becoming another character. It's like trying to put yourself in their moccasins, you know? And so if you're listening and trying to understand them as if it were you, that to me is empathetic listening. No, no, that's my thought.
Thank you. Thank you. Marta.
Hello, I'm Marta and I'm a codependent. I will only share that I have a problem with this by being, I would say, too much empathetic. I remember being in a recovery center when I was 22 years old, and I heard so many stories, and I was always crying and listening to the people. Like in this event as well, I already cried a few times listening to the feelings and being empathetic with the stories and the pain and the suffering we all human beings have been coping with. So in my regard, I have to do maybe a better job not to become so much feeling and be more supportive, I believe, to the other. I don't know. I'll think about it and get some advice. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a tricky word. It's kind of like doing something, but it's also how you do it and where it's coming from and all that stuff. I learn as I go. So another thing about listening is listening without responding or reacting. And there's a Experiences with Crosstalk handbook that I've had around forever that it talks about what crosstalk might be, like nodding your head, which is hard to not do. But I guess what I wanted to say about that is that if I'm reacting because I can't help it, that's okay. You know, I mean, I'm grooving with it and whatever. So accepting where others are in their recovery process. I listen to experience the wisdom of others. What does it say in the opening prayer? Open my heart to the light of wisdom. Not giving unsolicited advice. I can go up to somebody after a meeting and say, you know, may I comment on your share? Or would you like feedback? But I don't just barge in and say, you should, blah, blah, blah. I know. So, okay. Then I can also take these listening skills out into the world. And it works pretty well there too. So, Betty, did you have a comment?
Yeah, just on the subject of meetings, I'm glad this topic came up because I've never heard it come up in a meeting about issues about meetings. I find I'm very sensitive to judgment, probably because I had that in my childhood or with my family. And I have a sense, and I'm also very intuitive. And I pick up a sense of judgment when I share often. For some reason, I just, sometimes I don't share because I sense that I'm going to be judged or I don't want to be judged. And I think just because people aren't saying things doesn't mean that you're not judged. And it's a bit of a dichotomy for me and a bit of a challenge about CODA, which I'm totally involved in. It's just, I love meetings. I learn from meetings. I like sharing in meetings, but I don't really share completely. I'm realizing because a lot of times I'm not sure that it's safe, even in the silence. That's one thing I wanted to say. And I'm curious if anyone else has had that feeling. And also, I've noticed that I don't really think of myself as a major characteristic as being people pleasing, although I definitely do that. I think that codependents do that. But, and I realize that I watch for people's reaction when I share. So I'm actually still looking for people pleasing. You know, I mean, I'm doing people pleasing. I'm looking for that validation in meetings. And that's a bit uncomfortable for me as well. I don't know if that could be a topic that could be shared on, but I'm grateful to share my thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you. One thing that's coming to my mind is I'm probably always being judged by what I say or how I look and all that stuff, but it might be that I'm being judged favorably. And one thing I heard that a sponsee said to me just about every day was, those who matter don't mind, and those who mind don't matter. So if somebody has a problem with me, you know, that's going to happen. It's okay. It doesn't have to ruin my life that not everybody thinks I'm cool. And I don't know if this is speaking to what you just spoke about, but, you know, the people close to me, they care and they matter. So anyway, that just came to my mind. Where are we? Okay, so the last thing about meetings is slogans, but it's at the end of the book. So I'm going to hold off on slogans and go on to what we're here for in CODA, relationship building. So this was a funny thing that happened. The first section is on I messages. And I started writing on and on about, you know, this being the first thing under relationship building, so it must be pretty important, and how the for safety's sake says I use I statements when sharing, and how the workbook says, what do I want? What do I think? What do I feel? We learn to ask ourselves that. Denial pattern being, I have difficulty identifying what I am feeling. All these I statements. What I was talking about feelings, I feel such and such. And I didn't know really if I wanted to get into all this, but one of our presenters got sick and had to cancel. And her topic was feelings. And I have all this written down here about feelings. And so I got to share on it yesterday. It was just a coincidence. So anyway, I won't go over all of that again. But basically, the how do I feel, how do you feel thing, if I'm keeping in my I statements, then I'm aware of what I'm feeling. And let's see. Yeah, it's just a lot of people in the world, and I used to use the word you, and it just got to be where I was always talking about, well, you know, you do this and you do that. And then somebody said, why don't you say, I do this and I do that, when that's really what I meant. And it's taking ownership. And it feels really good. It really makes me think. So it talked about fear of hurting another person by using the I statements. I'm deathly afraid of hurting anyone. And I held back on saying some things that I really should have said, that I felt and what I needed. And it really didn't go well. The other person didn't know what I wanted and felt. And I started shutting down and getting resentful. And, you know, they couldn't do anything about it. They didn't know what was going on. So it is important to use those I statements and speak up. And then there's the fear of angering another person. But I overcome that too. I've learned that some people aren't going to be not angry all the time. Some people get angry and that's life. So I used to struggle a lot more than I do now. So here under relationship building is boundaries, which have been talked about already, but I need to set a boundary when I'm aware that, excuse me, that I'm uncomfortable. I need to speak up again. And it's a skill that requires practice. And of course, our wonderful program has a pamphlet on establishing boundaries. Yes. There's so much CODA literature nowadays. It's wonderful. So it talks about detachment. Detaching when I want to control another person. It's a good idea. I am powerless, after all, over other people. I didn't used to believe that. And that's why I'm here. It made my life unmanageable. I can take the focus off others when appropriate and focus on myself and my recovery. And I can be caring but not caretaking, which is rude and disrespectful when others can take care of themselves. So making choices is the next category. And there's a booklet that just came out that's a takeoff on the old Making Choices booklet. And it's called Affirmation, Making Choices in Recovery, Affirmations for Working on Our Shortcomings, Working Steps 6 and 7. So that came to mind. And I just really love this little booklet. It has, obviously, affirmations, as the new name says, and helps me get to a point where I want to change and I want my higher power's help. So let's see. It says in the tools for recovery, typically codependents are poor decision makers. And I used to want other people to make the decisions for me so I wouldn't make a mistake. And so there's those old tapes in my head saying, you don't know what's best. So let somebody else decide what movie to go to or whatever. So making decisions, I've learned there's not always a black and white, good and bad answer either. So just decide something and do it. Black and white thinking paralyzes. And, oh, there's more. Lost my place. I'd like to now talk about any difficult decision that you might be facing and possible actions that you might take. And if we could actually, let's try some breakout rooms, because there's enough people here, there might be enough problems to talk about. So let me see, am I able to do breakout rooms? Yes. So what I want you to do is with your smaller group, have, you know, jump in if you have a situation that you need to make a decision on. And the people listening could maybe ask questions, but not say you should do this and that. But maybe just by talking out the decision, you might come to your own answers. So we're going to try this. I'll break you up. You do need to hit join. And then we'll bring you back in about 7 minutes. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Sorry, how many minutes did you say?
7.
Okay, thanks.
Everybody has to hit join. If you've just joined and have a join button to join a breakout room, you can click on that. Or does anybody in this group have a decision to be made that you'd like to talk about? Maybe bring up pros and cons and get it out of the dark, scary place in your head. Just raise your hand and I'll call on you.
Sarah, I just see there's some people alone in the room. So I just quickly going to go around and then they can come back to this meeting, I think. Or I can actually move them to another room. Oh, let me do that.
Okay, thank you. Does anybody here want to share? Well, maybe we could all get back together again. 20 seconds. Okay, I think we all are back. So, gaining insight. David, did you have something to share?
I wish we had more time in the breakout room. Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I lost track of time. So gaining insight is like a vision, an understanding, an awareness, intuition, perception, and discernment. I like looking up words. So writing in journals, which would be my experiences, my memories, my feelings, my thoughts, hopes, needs, fears, desires. And I would add writing about making decisions, the pros and cons. That's usually what my journal gets, is I'm confused. I don't know what to do. So I start writing. I can read it aloud for self-knowledge, and I can review earlier writings to see my progress. That's journaling. Doesn't the sponsor always tell us to journal more? I don't know. Mine does. Maybe I don't do it enough. Anyway, letters would be another thing I could write to myself, my higher power, my partner, my friends, other people, someone who has died. If I have something to say and I, you know, can't call them up, I can write a letter. I can express my love, anger, disappointment, or regret and make amends. These letters may or may not be sent. I might just need to vent and then burn it. But it still helps to write out and see, oh, I guess that is a little irrational for me to think that. And so then I can maybe write another letter that I would share. It's been suggested to write without concern for spelling or punctuation. But I can't even do that texting. I'm constantly going back and correcting my writing. I don't know. So the 12 steps, yay. That's a way to gain insight. The booklet says, when conflicts and problems come up, the steps can guide us to resolution. And it takes the steps take me from powerlessness to a spiritual awakening. Study and do them. Work the steps. Let's try a couple shares on what is your favorite step and why. Oh, it might be good to post them, huh? I should have thought about that. Anybody have a favorite step? David?
David, codependent, favorite step. Step one, journey of 1,000 miles begins with a first step. My recovery, nothing happens in my recovery till I become open to the possibility of another way. Excerpt from the 12-step handbook. Step one, admitting I am powerless over others. Trying to do that, control other people, is the doorway to insanity. Step one. Thank you.
Thank you. The Shabera?
Hi, my name is Shabera. I'm codependent. Step one is also for me as well, because I feel like step one is every day for me. because I'm powerless over people, places, and things. And that's the core of my addiction, was how I coped in my life. Because I was growing up in a dysfunctional family, how I grew up around dysfunction, my behaviors have been dysfunction, and I've always obsessive over other people, addicted to people. I try and replace my feelings, not looking at myself, and I look at other people. So but step one, being powerless over people, place, and things. That's the first step to begin with of recovery, because it's 12 steps. So step one is definitely very powerful for me, and I can really relate to that. Because even today, step one is powerful, because I'm powerless over the girls I live with, because I like to control things. I want things to go my way, but then I realize I'm powerless because I'm living with girls that I don't even know. And the fact is that because I've worked my codependency, I'm very boundaried around people, and it's been really good. Step one, so that's definitely my favorite step to begin with. That's where the 12 steps come in. Thanks, I'll leave it there.
Thank you. Leisha?
Hi, I'm Leisha. I'm codependent. And you would think that step three would be my favorite, just to give me the serenity. But friends in the program, and the program itself has really taught me to love step 10. It's twofold. The continue to take personal inventory. I used to be afraid to take that inventory of, oh, what did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? Well, now I can also look at what did I do right? Where did I go right? What do I want to build upon? And it taking that inventory is just a way for me to improve. To see where I've been codependent and what I can work on. And the other half of step 10 is when I'm wrong, to promptly admit it. And, you know, I never wanted to say I was wrong before. I never wanted to admit it before. But now it's okay. And I love the fact that if I immediately admit it, and make amends immediately, I'm not walking around with that guilt or shame or regret. And so I love step 10 for that purpose. Thank you.
Thank you. Marta.
Hi, I'm Marta. I'm a codependent. Definitely the step two. After and even during our recovering, the feeling of lost, the feeling of chaos, the pain, the suffering, the feeling of we know it all and there is no way out. And how can we live? And but you keep on fighting and struggling, and then you came to believe. And that is a message of hope. That to me is a beginning of a big process of recovering in all possible ways, after the first step, of course. Thank you.
Thank you. Sarah?
Hi, I'm Sarah, codependent, and the 11th step is my favorite. You know, prayer is where I talk to God, and meditation is where I listen for to see what God's will for me is. And I can just say that, I mean, meditation for me is like a muscle, and if you don't use it, kind of you lose it, so to speak. And there have been times in my recovery when I have meditated a lot, and that's the only time that I've really spent a lot of time in the present moment and away from my, you know, I live in my head, and being able to actually be in my body and be in the present moment was like heaven. So I had, you know, some really
great experiences and a lot of feelings of acceptance when I have a consistent meditation practice. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So the next one is positive thinking, which sounds familiar. The previous section had stay positive. So it must be important. Stay real. And if you can, be positive. Seeking peace and solutions. I know that whatever I focus on increases. So if I focus on the positive increases. If I focus on the negative increases. So there's just a better chance of my thoughts dictating what happens somewhat. So forgiveness, it's a gift we give ourselves. Consciously deciding to let go of negative feelings towards a person who has harmed us. That's where gaining insight comes in, is it improves my emotional, spiritual, physical health to forgive someone because they're not all dark in my head anymore. It's that negativity again, but releasing that and forgiving the person who may have harmed me. It's just better. So how do I get to forgiveness? Work the steps with a sponsor. Humor is the next one. What kind of 12-step booklet lists humor as a tool? Well, it's a good one because I took life way too seriously. But now I am spontaneous and I have a lot of fun. It's kind of a big goal in my life, is to have fun, because for so long I worked without the balance of having fun too. So any chance I get, I play ping pong or canasta or whatever it is I like to do. So the next way to gain insight is an inventory. And the fourth step is an inventory of the past. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And the 10th step was just mentioned, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. So I can do that instead of unpleasant and painful feelings recurring and building up and overwhelming me. I can deal with them as soon as possible. And I will tell my annual, usually in October 10th step, when we talk about 10th step story. I was new to 12-step programs and I was new to a company, and they were celebrating something on a boat. I was nervous, but I was following this one woman around because I didn't know too many people. Anyway, I said something and instantly regretted it. And not long after that, I apologized. I said, I didn't mean to say, or I'm sorry for what I said. I didn't mean it that way. And she said, oh, I didn't even hear you. So here I would have felt bad for days and years. But I apologized and just everything was cool. So, do the 10th step daily or when disturbed. So when I'm disturbed, what am I supposed to do? Sit and trying to figure it out? No, do an inventory. So spirituality. So I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I guess we have about an hour to the next speaker. Is that right? I think. So
yes.
Growing up, I was sincerely religious and a goody-goody. But I was deeply depressed. At age 8, I got depressed and it lasted 35 years, something like that. And 37 years. So when I got to 12-step programs, I couldn't listen to people talk about a loving higher power. I would just sit and cry. For a couple of years, I just sat and cried because I couldn't understand it. And I would go to these workshops and I would have to leave because I just would fall apart. And tried to figure that higher power out. And I finally came to peace when I realized that I can't figure it out. And if I could, it wouldn't be higher than me. So I came to peace with it, and I'm just really happy about that. So gratitude lists are part of spirituality. I used to email someone my gratitude list at night, someone in program. And now I do with my spouse, one of the things we do is do what we're grateful for that day. I'm losing my voice. Good grief. I don't usually talk quite this much. So I try every night to think of different things I'm grateful for during the day. And like I said, my phone usually is on the list and my health, our health. And one time, you know, I've been doing these gratitude lists for a long time. And one time I was driving along, listening to my iPod, and I see in the car next to me this really tough looking guy going like that. And I couldn't hear their music, but it was jiving to the song on my iPod, which was the Partridge Family. And it just cracked me up that here this tough guy was rocking out to my music in my mind. So that made my gratitude list. So sometimes I can be creative. If I focus on the positive things, I'll see more positive things and find more things to be grateful for. So I'd like you just to close your eyes right now and think of a few things that you are grateful for. So if everybody could do that for a little bit of time here. See how many things you can come up with. Okay, well, some people probably came up with nothing. Some people came up with a lot of things or somewhere in between. I know when I started to do gratitude lists, for some reason, obscenities came on there because I couldn't think of anything. No, I didn't really. Well, kind of. But so I believe a lot of the previous sessions have talked about meditation and prayer, but my blurb on that is, what is conscious contact? And being conscious is a medical term for being aware and alert, but it can also mean being mindful and purposeful. So I kind of wanted to open it up for people to say, describe what conscious contact looks like for you. And you don't have to share your whole meditation practice or, you know, but yeah, try to keep it within 3 minutes anyway. But just share, what does conscious contact with your higher power mean to you? If you could raise your hand if you have anything to share. Or you can put it in the chat.
Emma.
I think for me, I reach conscious contact when I let go of me. And then that's allowing. Thanks.
Thank you. Let go. Sue.
I'm Sue Pendant. I practice conscious contact by asking one question throughout the day, whether it's for what I should say or not say to somebody, do or not do. And the question I ask to get conscious with my higher power is this for my highest good? Mm. That opens up the field for me to ask myself, okay, is this my decision or is this his decision for me? And it gets me out of my own will and into his, because he gives me very clear answers. Thank you.
Thank you. Sean?
Hi, everybody. Just this morning, it felt like some kind of out-of-body experience. I was doing my exercise, and yet I felt like my higher power was talking to me as I was doing my exercise. You know, I was trying to meditate and ask him what he wanted me to do. And I was so, when I got back into my, you know, my ritual of the exercise, what just happened, you know? And that was something new that I experienced in all this time in recovery for him. You know, I checked the motivations and if it was pure, you know, everything was checked all right. And that was so wonderful. It's such a spiritual thing. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. So there are very many ways to meditate. There's no right or wrong way. And that's a big deal for me, because when I go to meetings and hear people say, well, I meditate 2 hours twice a day, every day, I think, ah, I'm a bad person. I don't do that. Well, I have my own way of meditating, and it seems to be working pretty well for me most of the time. And what I do, I'm not good at quieting my mind. Well, it can be quiet for a little while, but to sit there, I would fall asleep, because I'm an Energizer bunny. I'm doing things all the time. So when I sit and I'm not talking, I pretty much fall asleep, which is a blessing. Yes. But what was I going to say? Meditation. When the steps were written, meditation meant to contemplate something, not the, I mean, that's when it was written. It has evolved into, you know, the Om and the quieting your mind and everything like that. But my mind focuses on something I read or something in a meditation book or on a candle or something, but I focus my mind on something. And because clearing my mind sounds kind of weird, but I admire people who can do that. I've just never really been in touch with that for any length of time anyway, not for 2 hours twice a day, every day. So contemplating a spiritual principle can produce the same effect as clearing the mind, which is inner peace. So prayers, my favorite prayers are help and thanks. And I, coming from the background I came from, I love the words, thy will be done. It's just a matter of praying for guidance. That's all it is for me. It's, I want the best, and I don't always know what that is. So I'm asking, thy will be done. That's the same with help. It's asking for guidance. I don't typically pray for a new red car, but I might ask for one. I don't know if it'll be red anyway, but I don't usually ask my higher power for that kind of material things. Which is okay to do because I can say anything, which is on here somewhere. I can pray from my heart, or I can say certain memorized prayers when I don't know what to pray about. I mentioned here a couple, there's a step, a prayer for each step at the end of the 12-step handbook, and they're going to be incorporated in the new version of the workbook in a year or two. That should come out by each step. And there's going to be tradition prayers as well. Yay. So let's see. The third step prayer found in the Codependence Anonymous or the Coda Big Blue Book, whatever you call it, says, I just want to read this one prayer because I've been talking and I need to talk to my higher power too. God, I give to you all that I am and all that I will be for your healing and direction. Make new this day as I release all my worries and fears, knowing that you are by my side. Please help me to open myself to your love, to allow your love to heal my wounds, and to allow your love to flow through me and from me to those around me. May your will be done this day and always. Amen. The Tools for Recovery booklet says prayer is also a thought stopper, replacing obsessive or stinking thinking with positive words or thoughts. So higher power is the next category. And I typically, if I were in a workshop and somebody would say, describe your higher power, I would say pass because I can't. Like I said before, I don't understand it. And so I just pass. But I do have one and it's pretty cool. I just can't describe it. So let's see. Whatever idea I have the feeling of unconditional love, which is also another thing that's hard to describe. So the 12 promises, I can expect a miraculous change in my life by working the program of Codependence Anonymous. We get the 12 promises and they show me what I can expect. And I'll just mention my favorite promise is promise 8. I learned that it is possible to mend, to become more loving, intimate, and supportive. I have the choice of communicating with my family in a way which is safe for me and respectful of them. And boy, that's a loaded one. The first part, yes, I'm here to have better relationships. And the program tells me how to do that. And the part about the family, well, how are we doing on time? I think I have time. Basically, okay, thanks. Basically, I was really fake around my family most of my life. And when I, what am I talking about? Promise 8, yes. When I came out, I had to stop contact with them because they would always tell me I was going to hell and how much they were, that I was hurting them. And I was still in my depressive years and it was just dangerous for me to hear that all the time. So after about five years, my parents came to visit us. And during those 5 years, I sent Christmas cards, but my partner would read the letter. The letters that they sent just to make sure nobody died or something like that, but just to not give it to me because I couldn't handle it. But then they came to visit and we didn't talk about serious matters about me going to hell or anything. And so we started a relationship, and it was safe for me and respectful of them. So those are really important words for me, and I can carry that into all my relationships. Make sure that it's safe for me and be respectful of them as well as myself. Oh. Next page. Ooh, my favorite topic, service. I hope I don't lose my voice. So service. Let me start out by saying when I got to CODA, I was exhausted from doing so much for everyone. Then I heard in CODA that my motto should be just say no. And that's really, maybe nobody said that, but I got the impression that I was supposed to say no all the time. So I started to say no a lot. And then I was told that being of service in CODA would help my recovery. I was confused. Now I'm supposed to say yes? How can I do any service and not be codependent? Well, there's literature on that, I'm happy to say. So what the Tools for Recovery talks about is business meetings, which are group conscience meetings where we talk about the meeting, get opinions on people on how it could be run better. And everybody has a voice. And the group conscience is just that, asking higher power to talk through the people and to take a vote and come to what the best answer is for all involved. Let's see, the seventh tradition is important in service. If you can give financially, that's great. It's not a requirement. But also doing service work is part of the seventh tradition, giving service where I can't give so much money. And we'll talk about the many different types in a minute. Let's see. Oh, and service also helps the CODA fellowship flourish and grow. No service, no CODA. That's in this book. Anyway, it talks about the 12 traditions, and I don't think I'm going to have time. I was going to talk about the 12-piece relationship toolkit because it's taking the traditions that are in all the literature and making it applicable to relationships as well as in meetings and in the fellowship. So let's see. The traditions guide the groups to solve issues, and it's principles over personalities. So now I'd like to look at different ways of doing service. And I think I have a screen share of it. Oh, wow, it's right there. But you can't see it. Okay. Okay, do you see this? Oh, dear.
Yes.
Hi, what happened? Pause for meditation. There it is. Okay, here's my list. And we have meetings now on Zoom. And some in person. So in the in-person meetings, on the right there, you can open the room, set up the room, and do the inventory and ordering of literature. Remember those days, if you've been in CODA more than 2 years, where meetings had literature for purchase. And on Zoom, obviously, you can host and screen share and do these other things that we do in both kinds of meetings, read the documents, greet newcomers, contribute to the seventh tradition, be the treasurer, listen to others without judgment, sponsor, co-sponsor, start a new meeting, add your name to the meeting contact list, safeguard the traditions, chat with other members before, after, and outside of meetings, share in a meeting, and listen in a meeting. These are all forms of service that any of us can do. So the important thing here, things to consider. Oh, I can make this bigger. There. Okay. It's very important to do service with the right attitude for the right reasons. Otherwise, I'm just being codependent. So, what should I consider? Am I doing more than I want to, perpetuating a pattern of overcommitment and burnout? Are there things to do even though I'm new? Yes, there are. You know what? Why don't I save my voice? Can I have a volunteer to read the rest of these?
Hi, I can read.
Oh, thank you.
Things to consider before doing service work. Let me just remove this here on my screen. Am I doing more than I want to, perpetuating a pattern of overcommitment and burnout? Are there things to do even though I'm new? Am I avoiding service because I'm afraid of making mistakes? Am I avoiding service in order to isolate from my group? Am I using fear of my control issues as an excuse not to give service? Am I volunteering for a particular task because no one can do it right but me? Do I think if I don't do it, it won't get done? Am I doing it because I want to or because I think I have to? Do I feel resentful about the service I'm currently doing? Am I being a martyr or a victim? Am I afraid to be a leader? Am I willing to do a smaller task because I think I have to be in charge? As I do my service, will I remember to stay in contact with my higher power? Am I willing to do my part and let go of the results? End of reading.
Thank you. So I can certainly relate to some of those sayings, I'm embarrassed to say. So maybe if you have overcome some of these feelings, like I'll just admit that I might think if I don't do it, it won't get done, or it has to be done my way, or it's not right. So if anybody has any experience with overcoming these tendencies, please raise your hand. Let's see, will I be able to see you? Sean. Yes.
Oh, yeah. I chaired a CODA meeting for more than a year. Our GSR just left the group and just handed over the reins to me without any warning or anything. I was still new to the group and I just finished my step work. And I felt obligated to do the meetings at least once or twice a week. And the resentment was building up every time because I had to cancel some of the things that I had to do, even meeting up with my family or my friends, you know, only to find out to open a room that was empty, or there were just two or three people in there, and it got to be building and building up until, you know, my higher power came up with an idea of the GSR comebacking and trying to stage a new election. And I said, okay. And I just bowed down. And it was painful for me, but I knew I was being codependent and I had to go through the grieving process, you know, of letting go and accepting and everything, arguing with myself and everything.
But I just had to let it go. I knew I was still being codependent, even if I was thinking that I was practicing step work and doing the tools of recovery. But it's okay now. You know, I feel better right now. And I have moved on and moved forward. The group apparently doesn't have any meetings right now, and they're trying to call me back for face-to-face meetings, but I have to decline. I did my amends actually with them. We had one meetup. It wasn't really a meeting face-to-face, and we just discussed things, and I said, yeah, I am moving forward, and I just have to let it go. And yeah, my higher power just gave me the lesson, you know, because the resentment was really was growing very, 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 very large to an extent that I was so angry at myself already. And I had to forgive myself with that. First thing I had to do was to forgive myself. So yeah, thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Mahima?
Yeah, hi, Sheila. Thank you for your service. I have avoided doing service because I am afraid of making mistakes, and that's the biggest one for me. Like if I'm screen sharing, what if something hangs or I don't share it fast enough? And, you know, like, yeah, it is. I was afraid. I'm afraid of service sometimes. I have think that I would be unwilling to do a smaller task. When I was new, I thought that only good service is giving a talk, and, you know, I was not interested in being a leader or being a Zoom host. But now I enjoy those as well. Yeah, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Candace.
Hi, I'm Candace, and I'm codependent. Thank you so much for raising this very important question. And I would kind of almost like skirt to the back of the room of the class kind of thing, because of that self-judgmental thing going on. You know, I would just judge myself so harshly and think that maybe I won't be a good reader and I'm going to make a mistake and fuck up the whole reading. And like, I really, and I didn't actually think about this now that you've brought it up. You know, I would inbox and say, I'm only observing tonight. And yet when I start reading, I really get into it. And I do want to, in my heart, I want to give service and I really want to contribute. But because of the fear attached to me messing up a reading, I would actually say no. So I'm going to be more aware of this now and just jump in and give service because it's in my heart and not be so harsh on myself. So thank you. Thank you again. Thank you.
Thank you. Lynn?
I still struggle sometimes with, you know, trying to hide in the back, especially when I'm not feeling the greatest. So I'll just, you know, just hide behind my little Zoom picture or whatever and try not to be seen at all. So I'll avoid service because I don't want to be seen.
Thank you. David?
David, codependent. For me, service is the secret sauce. Doing service, which I didn't start till very late in CODA, has opened up areas to me for my recovery I had no idea existed before I started doing service. So I like doing service now because it is deepening and furthering my recovery journey. So thank you.
Thank you. Sandy.
Hi, everybody. I'm Sandy. I'm recovering from codependency. I think for me, definitely the fear of making mistakes. But also along with that is the fear of being criticized by other people in the meeting for not doing it exactly the way they think I should be doing it. And I've actually had instances, say, for example, when I was reading a meditation or whatever, that people would put in the chat, oh, you're reading too fast. And other people would put in the chat, oh, you're reading too slow. And, you know, it was like a, and sometimes, you know, especially if I was new at a particular service task, some people seem to get quite impatient with the fact that it took me time to figure it out and would jump in and sort of take over. And so these experiences left me feeling, like it wasn't really safe for me to sort of learn and sort of fearful of people's criticisms. Yeah. So I pass with that.
Thank you. No, we're done here in about 26 minutes. I'm just answering a chat, I believe. Yeah, the times aren't perfect. Nothing is. But I did. Oh, let's see. Where was I anyway? Oh, about service. This event has taught me so much, or reinforced my belief that I don't have to do everything. I mean, things have happened and people have taken care of it. And it wasn't all me. And for some strange reason, I grew up thinking I had to do it all. And I found that I don't, and it's a beautiful thing. And I'm filled with gratitude that people came and that people helped and the whole thing. So I think there was, the benefits of service. Yeah. Well, let me just read this real quick. Being of service lets us be part of the group. It teaches us that we can contribute. It helps ensure that the meetings we attend will continue to be available. It teaches us to take responsibility for our own needs. It gives us a chance to practice our recovery in our relationships with others in the program. Being of service can be the means for us to learn how to organize and prioritize. It gives us an opportunity to face our character defects, things like perfectionism, the need to control, the need to take care of, and our feelings of fear and shame. It might be the way we learn to delegate, to let go and be responsible for our commitment. It could be the way we learn to know when we have overcommitted, giving us a chance to ask for help. It teaches us balance, when to say yes and when to say no. It offers us the chance to use our talents and discover new talents we didn't know we had. It helps us as well as others. It allows us to set healthy practice healthy boundaries. It helps us develop healthy and loving relationships with other recovering codependents. And it helps us become human beings rather than human doings, which I could talk on and on about being a doer. So I want to just read something else that's new in CODA, which is the CODA service prayer. And this helps me stay focused when I'm going to do service work. I usually say this: higher power, please help us stay mindful in our service work, reminding us that we do not seek personal power, nor do we govern or control others to advance our personal agendas. Instead, we practice anonymity, humility, tolerance, gratitude, amends, and forgiveness. And with that, I would like to talk about slogans, which are in the back of the Tools for Recovery booklet. So, how should we do this? The slogans are weird for me because some of them I've heard in other programs, but they're good. Now they're in CODA literature, so they're CODA too. So there's some acronyms. Denial, D-E-N-I-A-L, don't even know I am lying. Then there's do the next right thing, easy does it. Fear, does anybody know what fear means or fear stands for with the acronym? Keep it clean. Okay, well, when I was new, I heard it was F everything and run. Excuse my language. But then I heard it was, like it says in the CODA book, face everything and recover. So,
False evidence appearing real.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I like that. If I have fear, it's probably not as bad as I think, maybe, sometimes. Thank you. I think everybody knows what HALT is, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. How important is it? If nothing changes, nothing changes. I've heard these things in this event earlier. If you think you can or think you can't, you're right. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results. It works if you work it. Gotta work it every day. And what does KISS stand for? Keep it simple, sweetheart. Let go and let God. Life is simple. First you do one thing and then you do the next. Live and let live. Oh, somebody else mentioned nuts, not using the steps. One day at a time, of course. Progress, not perfection. Perfectionism had to go out the window. On everything. Including this event. I was blessed with a sense of humor about the little glitches. I don't know if you guys know, but some of the people signed on with my name, Sarah Jess. It just automatically named people that. I mean, who would think of this? Oh, technology. Gotta love it. Okay, I digressed. Put down the magnifying glass and pick up the mirror. Say what you mean what you say, but don't say it mean. Oh, I like this one. Sponsor. Sage person offering newcomers suggestions on recovery. That works out well. The only way out is through. That's a song, remember? You can look it up. This too shall pass. When I point a finger at you, three more point back at me. Work it, you're worth it. Yesterday is history, tomorrow a mystery. Today is a gift. That's why it's called the present. And you're only as sick as your secrets. I like the other one better for an ending one. I'll have to rewrite this. Anyway, oh, what I forgot to write was the closing. So I will open it up for any comments or questions at this time. And then we'll wrap it up. David?
You spot it, you got it.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. You can ask anything on the, or comment on anything of the whole presentation, or mention other slogans that you know. Anyone? Mahima.
Yeah, I had a question in the service worklist. First of all, it was a good presentation. In the service worklist, we had that, am I doing service because I want to or I have to? And I always thought that we have to do service because it's good for recovery and we should and all that should and have to words. So it's like if someone does not, like if I think when I was a newcomer, I would never want to do service. I started doing it only because I had to, because my sponsor said so. And then I started enjoying it. So like, I'm like, and I would also like tell my sponsor that do service. And you know, like, so is it wrong to do service even if you don't want to? Because I'm confused.
Ask your sponsor. Oh dear, good question. What would the outcome be?
Like, I think one would eventually, like, I don't know, I think if my sponsee is doing service, even if I'm forcing her, she would eventually like her. But now I'm thinking maybe she will be resentful. I don't know.
Yeah. It could backfire. It could go either way. But I think suggesting service or saying service has been very helpful to my recovery is better than saying you must do service or else. But yeah, it I don't know. It grew on me. Boy, oh boy. Thank you. David?
Yes, I searched the coda.org and the internet without success for the service prayer. If you could put that in the chat or a link to it, I'd appreciate that. Also, someone asked in the chat if you could put a link to the slide you showed on service work, and I would also appreciate that. Thank you.
Sure, I will work on that. It's just from Carrying the Message, if you have this booklet.
Oh, great. But it's in Carrying the Message, I'll find it there.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, it's just a little document here.
Yeah. I know there's so much CODA literature and there's so much good stuff that there used to be, I don't have my booklets with me, but there used to be a booklet on sponsorship that had guides at 10 questions for sponsor and sponsee to answer that is no longer available. It's just the amount of material that is and isn't available is, there's a lot on both sides of that equation.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So say again the booklet it's in, please.
Carrying the Message.
Carrying the Message. Excellent. Living the I'll make a note step. Of that.
Yeah, thank it's you. Kind of greenish, forest green.
Yeah.
And then...
yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, here, I'm looking for the document and I'm not paying attention. Did anybody want to jump in here? We have a few more minutes. I'm not looking at the screen, so I can't call on you. So just speak up.
Mahima had her hand up.
Mahima.
Oh, I didn't lower it.
Oh, okay.
Melanie, then.
Yeah, good morning, Melanie, codependent. I was thinking about how I started in this culture that basically said you don't say no to service work, specifically when you are called to service by this 12-step program. And that was pretty useful for me in the beginning
because I needed something to distract me from like the cravings to drink and all of those things. And it's been a really weird dynamic switching, or at least it was, from that program to this program, where I already had the value of service work instilled in me. I wanted to be involved. I'm still terrified of messing up, and I do very frequently. But there's like learning boundaries now and moderation and not throwing my, learning how to say no, when it was always kind of taught to me that saying no was bad for my recovery. And now I'm learning like, sometimes you have to say no because you've got other things going on, and very difficult to find a balance. But I will say that if it hadn't been for service work, I wouldn't have stayed in the program. I would have probably slowly like isolated myself like I do, and then stopped going without like having that commitment, even if it was a small one. I don't think I would be sober, and I don't think I would be part of this group, and I don't think I would have stayed in recovery at all. So that's all I was thinking. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you. I'm working on my little presentation. I messed it up. Being imperfectly perfect. Well, why don't we close the meeting and have a few minutes off? How about that? Don't go away. We'll be right back. No. excuse me. Oh, I'd just like to thank you all for your being here and participating. And it was good for me. And ran out of things to say. So take it away, leader, and we'll close the meeting.
Thank you, Sarah.